This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Falling in love can be a wonderful thing. You may even have a story you can tell about how it happened for you. But can you tell a story about falling in love with a motor vehicle? Howard Zehr can, and he knows lots of other Virginians who can too. A very specific type of vehicle, in fact. Now, Dr. Zehr is well known worldwide for his work in his first career, but sometime back he added a second, photography. And that first career must be influencing the second because Dr. Zehr insists good photographers do not take pictures. They do something else entirely. Intrigued yet? I'm thinking you will be when Howard Zehr tells us about the first career and the second and how they combined to create his newest book filled with beautiful photographs of trucks and titled Pickups, A Love Story. First, though, the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. The book is titled Pickups, A Love Story. Pickup trucks, their owners, their stories. The book's author is an international activist on peace and justice issues, holds the post of Distinguished Professor of Restorative Justice at Eastern Mennonite University, is a founding member of the International Guild of Visual Peacemakers, and is also a professional photographer. So if at any point you'd like to talk with him, please do call us at 888-WMRA-TALK. Howard Zehr, welcome back to the Insight Studios.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you, Tom.
So, Dr. Zehr, can you connect the dots for me? Pickup trucks, photography, a book full of beautiful pictures of trucks and their owners, those owners' stories, and your long history of work in restorative justice. Are there any connections?
Well, there are connections, but the first one is just experiential. I've done a series of books, of photos and interviews. I've done all these very sort of heavy topics. I was ready for a break. I'm in the process of semi-retiring, so I needed something that was a little lighter. But the other connections are, one of the things I've learned in the justice work is how important story is. Story is, our identities are in stories. When we're traumatized, our stories are disrupted. Healing has to do with restorying our lives. So stories are really important, and I love getting people's stories. And what's important about this book, sure, the trucks are a lot of fun, but it's people and their stories. So that's one of the connections. The other is that I've often said that what restorative justice is about is treating everyone involved with respect, giving them voice, treating them with respect. And I've tried to do the same thing with this book, making no judgments, trying to leave out the stereotypic clues that might cause the reader to put people in a pigeonhole, and just present people as people with dignity and respect.
How'd you become a photographer?
Well, in the late 60s, early 70s, I guess it was the late 60s, I was working on a PhD in history of crime in Europe, and I was going to these little all-of-the-way archives that had no copier. And so I went to 47th Street Photo in New York, and I bought a exact 35-millimeter camera.
You remember where you bought the camera?
Oh, I remember. Absolutely, it was a big step for me. I had no interest in photography before that. I got two bean cans and a stick and made a lighting setup, and we would go to these various archives in Germany and France, and I would set this thing up and photograph the documents I need. And then I just got hooked. I just totally got hooked on photography.
What was it about photography that hooked you?
For one thing, I think it was a balanced, you know, my graduate studies really honed the rational, intellectual side, and it squashed the creative, intuitive side. And for me, photography has been a way to provide some kind of balance in my life. And I'm just really visually oriented.
Tell me more about that. The balance in your life thing, what was it? What was the switch that photography turned on?
Well, it's both sides of the brain. It's drawing on both sides of the brain. So much of my research, my PhD studies were kind of repressing that and pulling out the logical, the analytical and so forth. And photography was just a refreshing way to experience visuals as they come to me. And as you mentioned in the introduction, I began to realize, I worked as a photojournalist for many years, part-time for many years, around the world, actually. And I began to realize how predatory photography is and began to want to try to make it more more receptive. You know, when we do a photograph, we don't shoot something, we receive it. And so I've tried to think about that.
The idea of taking a picture is objectionable to you.
Well, and it has been. It's really interesting. If you go back, the history of photography was invented in 1839. And by the early 40s, there are all kinds of critiques and there are poems and so forth about the predatory nature of photography. People sneaking around, taking something that doesn't belong to them and so forth.
But in those early years, when photography first got started in the mid-19th century, people talked about receiving images, not taking them?
No, it was pretty much...
Oh, okay.
It was well, especially when Kodak invented the Brownie camera, that one that they said, you push a button, we do the rest. Everybody could do it. And then people were sneaking around and doing it. And then it got, in the 60s, there was a movie... escapes me right now. But there was a movie that's kind of enshrined.
Blow Up.
You're good.
On the right page. This book is called The Little Book of Contemplative Photography. Yes, so the movie Blow Up.
So the movie sort of enshrined this iconic idea of a photographer as a kind of almost sexual predator. Advertising talks about arsenals of equipment, it shows cameras as guns and so forth. So it's pretty embedded in our culture. And so I've just tried to counter that through my teaching.
Well, looking at this newest book, and maybe we can talk about some of your other books, the ones with much heavier subjects, where you use the same approach, lots of beautiful photographs and then people telling a little bit of their stories. But this latest book, Pickups, A Love Story, it's just obvious to me just from the cover, and then you just page through it, that these beautiful full color photographs, they look different than most professional photographs. There is something. I mean, after I saw the book and then I talked to you, Howard Zero, about your theory of receiving images rather than taking or shooting pictures, it just made sense to me why what you've captured, and excuse me for using that word, in these photographs just feels different.
It's interesting. Any more you can say about that? I'm curious how that...
and one of the things that I want to stress, especially for anybody who's just tuned in, you're going to hear us jump all around, since Howard Zier is this internationally renowned specialist on restorative justice issues, and has a long history working all around the world on that, has many books that he's written that are related to that topic. We'll be skipping around to some of the other work that he's done, as well as his theories on photography, and then into some of the stories in this book, Pickups, A Love Story. And what we'd love to hear is from you listening, if you have any stories at all, of your experience with pickup trucks, with a truck that was important in your life for any reason, or anybody you know who seems really attached to their pickup trucks. And I would imagine, Howard, you'd even be willing to hear about people who have love affairs with any kind of motor vehicle.
Sure. I have some.
So this particular book about pickups, to skip around, in part, you said, was because you needed the lighter subject from all those other heavy subjects that you'd covered. And those subjects included children whose parents were in prison.
My most recent book before this was Children Who Have Parents in Prison. Before that, I did one with victims of severe crime. And before that, I did one with men and women in Pennsylvania who are serving actual life sentences. All photographs, all portraits and interviews, not environmental portraits like these are. But
so it's understandable that after all the years that went into those three previous books that you'd want a lighter, more fun and certainly uplifting topic. But there's some reason why you chose pickup trucks specifically. I mean, there are lots of things that you could pick up for lighter topics. Tell us about your love affair with pickup trucks.
Well, I've had a number of pickup trucks. When I did this book, I was actually driving a Jeep, which was a little embarrassing, but I've gotten rid of that, and I have a pickup truck again. But actually, what started me on this, a number of years ago, my publisher said, when are you going to do a book about people and their pickup trucks? And I thought he was kidding. But after the last book I had done, I was ready for a break. And
why did he suggest that?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I didn't.
Because he knew that you liked pickup trucks?
I think maybe he liked pickup trucks. I'm not sure. And I think he had some idea of the importance of pickup trucks, and he may have had some stereotypic ideas of what Virginians would think about their pickup trucks, many of which are not worn out by this. You know, when you ask some people about Virginian pickup trucks, they will think about gun racks in the back. Well, there are very few. Actually, I saw very few gun racks in the back of pickup trucks.
Tell me about a phrase you just used, the importance of pickup trucks.
Well, America is one of the few countries in the world that where pickup trucks are so common and are so part of our culture. Mexico, Canada, Australia, and that's about it. Other parts of the world, Europe, for instance, pickup trucks are not nearly as important. We sell a lot of, since the late 90s, we have sold more trucks than cars in this country. It was trucks that saved the auto industry more than cars. Now, it's hard to, the definition of truck is anything with a truck chassis, and so pickups and large SUVs fall in that category. But we have, there's one in four, I think Americans have one in four Americans, there's one truck for every four Americans in this country. So they're important numerically. Mark Sawin wrote he's at EMU where I am.
Eastern
Mennonite University, and he wrote the essay at the back. He points out that it really is part of our culture, that the correlation as we got more urbanized, it wasn't that we got fewer trucks, we actually bought more trucks.
And so you're talking about numbers and implied there is kind of economic importance. But your book seems to be talking more about a sociological
importance. It is. It really is. It's really.
Talk to me about that.
Well, Mark argues, and I think he's right, that it sort of reflects America's self-image of being independent, self-reliant, freedom to go and do things, that kind of thing. And that may help explain why we bought more pickup trucks as we quit farming, where we actually needed pickup trucks. But for many of the people in here, the pickup truck is a repository of memories. It's an identity, a self-identity. When people, almost everybody who sees this truck starts telling me about a pickup truck in their family history or personal history somewhere. Pickups somehow, in a way that most cars don't, connect with our past and our family histories and so forth.
Well, let's give an example. Some of the stories in here are fairly long, and you've got 60 stories.
60 in there.
And sometimes three or more pictures of trucks and their owners. So it's chock full of all different kinds of flavors. And just one of them is at the very end here, this gentleman on page 202, sitting in what looks like a shed in the final picture, with some moccasins on and a great big smile on his face, and his white Ford pickup truck with Virginia plates prominently displayed is right next to him. And you have a few paragraphs of what he told you that start on page 202. Would you read that for us, please, Howard Zier?
Sure. This is Rich Bryan. He's the last one in the book. It seemed like a fitting conclusion to the book. I never thought I'd be in competition with my Ford pickup truck, but the more I thought of the similarities, the more similarities I came up with. We are both old and both retired. I'm 75 and my truck is a 1995 F-150, old in truck years. I'm a bricklayer and used it right good carrying loads on construction sites. Each of us has a lot of miles on us. My truck has 436,000 miles on it, and I've been married for over 50 years. We both could use a tune-up and some repair. We both did get some new parts. We both got our rear ends worked on. That pickup is part of me, I guess. I have a little chair out the shed, and I go out there and I sit and I keep the truck company. We keep each other company now. Neither of us are ready to give up yet, but I can see the end coming. Which of us is going first? Right now it's a dead heat.
Our guest, international peace activist, author, and professional photographer Howard Zier. His newest book is titled Pickups, A Love Story. Pickup trucks, their owners, their stories. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. If you want to join the conversation, we've got a phone line open at 888-WMRA-TALK. 888-967-2825. We'll be back in just a bit more than 1 minute.
I love my truck, well, she's right outside. I ain't got much luck, but I sure got a ride. It don't matter who lived, it don't matter who lied. I got my truck right by my side.
Glenn Campbell from 1981 telling us that he loves his truck. Now, our guest, Howard Zehr, is going to be at the Spitzer Art Center in Harrisonburg on September 6th with a display of many of his photographs, both those in the book and others. And we also understand that the bluegrass band Shenandoah Alley is going to be there playing music to celebrate the whole theme of pickup trucks. That's from 5 to 8 p.m. on September 6th. And Howard Zehr has been teaching restorative justice at Eastern Mennonite University for the past 2 decades. For many years, he's also taught a course on contemplative photography. His own latest photographic work is on display in his new book, Pickups, A Love Story. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. First call coming in from Farmville. I think this is Romulus. Romulus, am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes, sir, you are.
Your question or comment for Howard Zehr, please.
I have to say, I love that y'all are doing a show on pickup trucks. Mm-hmm. It is just absolutely hilarious to me. I love it. I got my own pickup truck, a little Ford Ranger, against my fiance's wishes, and yet when it came time for us to move in together, she was praising the truck left and right. And I will have to say, I'm going to have to find a copy of your book today. I definitely want to read it now, and just thank you very much.
So this truck is part of your life together now, I take it.
It is. I actually moved all of my stuff in one load, and of course hers took two, but no complaints.
Well, I'm glad you called in. Yeah, trucks are important. They really are.
And I've been surprised. There's not been a week gone by in the 3 months I've owned it where I've not had something being hauled in the bed of it.
How did you happen to get it in the first place?
Well, I first learned on a 91 Dakota with 750,000 miles on it.
First learned to drive?
Yes, on a 5-speed Dakota. And when I lost my previous vehicle, I insisted on getting a 4-cylinder, 5-speed truck, the most fuel efficient I could, and my fiance wanted me to go with a small car instead. So we argued it out, and then when I saw this one sitting on the lot for $17,000, I knew it was perfect. I test drove it, and it was love.
That's good. So the title of the book seems like it's appropriate for you, Pickups, A Love Story.
Pretty much. Pretty much. I will take my response off the air now. And again, thank you for the show.
Romulus, thanks so much for sharing some time today with us. So can we read some more from your book?
Sure.
You have several couples featured. I was reminded of this by Romulus in his story about his fiance, who later grew to love the truck. There are a few stories like that of men who had trucks and their wives who weren't sure about it at first.
Yeah.
And then they're singing the truck's praises more than their guy is.
Yeah.
The one couple I remember that was not male, female, was two brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a quite, for this book, because many of the stories are fairly short, this one's much longer.
These are twin brothers.
Yeah, twin brothers, Paul and David. And just to give a sample of how fun your book can be, and I was wondering if we could read near the end on page 56, if you'd read David and I'll read Paul.
Okay. Should I start the previous?
Yeah, step? Right at the top there.
We had some trouble with the truck because it has two gas tanks. One of the gas tanks was turned off, unbeknownst to me, and there was a miscommunication between us. Basically, I was running out of gas, thinking I was using the right tank, but I wasn't using the correct tank. The shutoff is broken. Paul had it disconnected.
No, it's not disconnected.
You said it was disconnected.
I did not.
You told me that you had it disconnected because it was leaking.
That was fixed. That's been fixed a long time ago.
They're both functioning?
Yeah.
I'm not so sure that's the case.
There are lots of family dynamics that show up in your book, Howard Zerr. It seems to me that many people consider their pickup trucks a part of the family.
Oh, yeah. And Chris and Jeannie, who are on the back cover, I mean, this beat up, this their whole relationship has been around this truck. When they got it, it had been rolled when they got it, so it's held together with duct tape and so forth. They've gone up and down the country doing farm work and so forth. This truck symbolizes their relationship. The funny sequel, though, to it is that this spring I got an email from one of them saying the truck was dying, and we went to the bookstore where Jeannie used to work to order my book, the pickup book, and they got to talking, and the woman who runs the bookstore said, well, I have a Jetta I was going to donate. So they traded it for two chickens and a tomato plant. So Chris says our truck has given us now this next phase of vehicle.
There's certainly, Howard Zerr, has been much written in the past about Americans' love affair with their automobiles. But you said something a few minutes ago that you think people who have pickup trucks have a deeper affection, are more likely to have a sense of relationship with a pickup truck than with a car. Tell me more about that.
Well, that's my impression. It may not be right. I mean, some people have attachments to particularly vintage cars and so forth. But the attachment to trucks has often nothing to do with the quality of the truck or the value of the truck. I mean, sure, there are vintage trucks in here with some wonderful stories, but there are junkers in here too, and people feel just as deeply, sometimes even more deeply, about their junkers. Michelle and David, who live here in this community, they have a pickup that they dated in and had raised their boys in and had it since the 70s, and they can tell me every dent in that truck and how it happened and the story about it.
So why? I realize you're not a sociologist or a psychologist, but you're basically an historian by training.
Yeah.
Your doctoral work was on crime history, if I recall correctly. But you must have some ideas about why people have this sense of depth of connection to their pickup trucks.
Well, as I said, I think it does represent something about the American self-image, about independence, self-reliance, freedom, and so forth. And maybe it's the fact that a pickup is a little quirkier than a car. It's a little less ordinary than a car. And, you know, most of us have had many cars in our lives, but we probably haven't had that many pickup trucks. So maybe it's also the fact that pickup trucks in our stories are a little bit more of an interruption than the overall story. I'm not sure. An interesting question.
There's this theory that if I keep my mouth shut, you'll talk.
I know. I figured that when you were looking at me. Although it could have been a commercial, too. Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the mysteries I'd like to understand. And, you know, some people think it's just men, but Debbie Snyder at Snyder's Auto here in town, who sells probably more pickups than anybody in the area, she says women are just or maybe more attached to their trucks than men.
Does she have a theory about why that is?
No, at least I didn't ask her. She may have.
All right, well, we're going next to Somsville, and I think this is Barry. Maybe he has some theories that will explain it. Barry, thanks so much for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your questions or comments, please, for Howard Zerr, author of the new book, Pickup's a Love Story.
Hi, Tom. Hello, Howard.
Hello.
Can you hear me okay?
Can hear you good, yeah.
Well, I just want to call in and congratulate you on writing, you know, what is, in fact, a seminal work in pickup truck books.
Thank you.
And I enjoyed being in the book with Officer Patches.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's a great thing. I don't know if you guys have talked about it, but the pickup truck is the great equalizer. I mean, you can drive your pickup truck anywhere and fit right in.
Yeah, I remember you said that nobody knows that what your profession is. You're just another guy in a pickup truck.
That's right. It's great. It's, you can just go anywhere. Especially with Brown Beauty. Brown Beauty is my 1985 F-150 long bed. And you can park that thing in any national forest on any forest road, and nobody will touch it.
Well, and you said the more rest, the better, except up to a limit anyway, up to a point.
Exactly. You got that right.
Now, there's another part of that truck, and that is that Patches, your cat, thinks it owns it.
Yeah, Patches is
a stray who came around a few years ago to our house. We live out in the country in a little village, and he just kept hanging around my pickup truck all the time and would walk around the back of it and get on top of it and look inside it. And when I would walk away and leave the window down, he would be in it. So he pretty much adopted the pickup truck. He can work the stick shift, but he can't reach the pedals.
Well, I know in the photograph you had painted a picture of this pickup truck, which you might want to say something about that. And then Patches had to get in the picture as well.
Yeah, I'm a designer by trade, and but I dabble in painting, and you know, you're always looking for something to paint. And so one afternoon I went out and I said, I'm going to paint my pickup truck. So I set up my easel and decided to do an oil painting of the pickup truck. So actually, when you came around and did the interview and did the photography, it was very nice because we were able to put the pickup truck in the same position as the painting and display both of them together.
Yeah.
You know, Barry, as you were talking, I'm scrambling, looking all through the book, trying, because I remember parts of your story from reading Howard's book, trying to find where in the book it was. And, of course, it's right near the beginning. It's the second story on page 15. But I don't know if you've mentioned it already here in the past couple of minutes, but if I'm looking at the right paragraph here, the truck that you're talking about that you call Brown Beauty is a 1985 F-150 long bed?
Exactly.
And is this your first truck?
Yes, it is my first pickup truck. We moved to the Valley in the late 80s, and we have an old house built in 1884 with some acreage and barns, and I just had to have a pickup truck because there was so much biomass coming off the property.
And how long ago did you get this truck?
I got it in 1990.
So it was 5 years old when you got it?
Yes, very low mileage, distinctly farmer in its odor.
I thought I recalled something that your kids complained about the aroma in the truck, and you tried everything you could to get it out?
Yeah, well, I didn't notice it as much, but they certainly did, so I kind of wondered who the problem was. But it turned out that with some vinegar and Clorox and things like that, I knocked it back. And nobody cares anymore.
But, do I recall, if I'm recalling the right section of the book, if this, in fact, was your story, that those children who originally complained about the odor more than 20 years ago now have children of their own who are your grandchildren who love the truck?
Yeah. I was able to teach both of my kids, who are now in their 30s, how to drive stick in the pickup truck, down the country lanes, in the field, first of all, in the field. And about a year or so ago, my grandson was up, and we rode him around in the field. He really loved it.
It's good. You're passing on a tradition there.
So, Barry, yeah. Do you have any theories to share about the love affair with trucks that so many people seem to have that's reflected in Howard's new book?
Well, in my case, my truck is it's just so incredibly useful and reliable. And it just does so many things for me. I mean, from renovation, debris, and supplies to, going to the dump. Whenever something goes wrong with one of my other cars, my regular car, I can always depend on the pickup to get me where I want to go. And I don't know, it's just kind of a part of the whole scene, and it's a part of my whole lifestyle.
Barry, thank you so very much for taking the time to share some time with us today on Virginia Insight.
Thanks, Barry.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Our guest has authored numerous books. Just some of those titles include Transcending, Reflections of Crime Victims, Doing Life, Reflections of Men and Women Serving Life Sentences, as well as The Little Book of Contemplative Photography. Howard Zehr's newest book, Pickups, A Love Story, Pickup Trucks, Their Owners, Their Stories. And if you have a story you'd be willing to share with us or a question to ask about this phenomenon, we'd be happy to hear from you at 888-WMRA. Talk. In all numbers, that phone number translates to 888 967-2825. You can also reach us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Do you have another section of this book that you would most like to share with us, Howard Zaire?
Oh, that's always difficult. The first story in it, I always get a kick out of. It's a vintage 1931 Ford pickup. It's a beautiful truck. But when George bought it, he was a college student, and some kid had taken it all apart. He got it in bushel baskets. And he said he wasn't a very good student, and so instead of studying at night, sometimes he'd go work on this truck, and he got it together. And then in the 80s, he had a business, and one of his suppliers forced him into bankruptcy, and the assessor was coming, and so he took it all apart, put it back in.
He took the truck apart.
And
so it wouldn't look like it had any value. It was just all pieces.
It was back in the baskets and work. And then later on, he put it back together and painted it. It's a lovely truck.
It's this incredible, beautiful yellow, at least in these four or five photographs that you've got in here. How do you capture images so that they jump out the way they do? I mean, not only is the bright yellow there, but there's the orange vintage license plates. There's the green of the grass, and I guess maybe it was autumn because there's some other colors in the grass and colors in the background. Is this also a trick of contemplative photography, as you call it? I mean, the idea of just having the philosophy in mind as you're snapping shots that you're not taking a picture, you're doing something else?
Well, I'm deliberately not doing photos that will make people look bad. And so I avoid some of the most visually interesting pictures you see in the paper and so forth. Also, aren't very respectful to people.
You're talking about newspaper
pictures. Newspaper pictures, journalism. So I'm thinking of that. I'm thinking as I talk to people, I'm watching the environment. I'm watching how their body language is and so forth. I don't pose people. I might suggest they stand over here or something, but I don't tell them how to stand. I hate when someone photographs me and tells me, move your head here and so forth. But I do watch people while I'm talking with them and watch how they handle their body. And I sometimes ask them, I might say, I notice you sit this way, you stand that way when you're talking. Would you mind doing that? So I'm trying to be really aware of the surroundings while I'm talking to people. I always do the interview before I do a photograph because you build a relationship in the interview. And then that the photographs are much more intimate than they would be if you just did it as a pure photograph without the conversation.
Do you have any sense of unusual connection with the images, both the people and the trucks or the other things in your picture when you're, I'm supposed to not say taking, receiving this image?
Well, I'm thinking about what they've talked about and the things that they've said are important about the truck. So I'm trying to keep those elements in place while I'm creating the photograph.
Our guest, Howard Zaire's newest book, Pickups, A Love Story. Our conversation to continue in a bit more than 1 minute. From 2007, Luke Bryan's song, We Rode in Trucks. Our guest on this edition of Virginia Insight, international peace activist, author, and professional photographer, Howard Zaire. His newest book is titled Pickups, A Love Story, Pickup Trucks, Their Owners, Their Stories. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham, and I'm a little sad, Howard, that we don't have time to play that whole four-minute song of Luke Bryan's, because it demonstrates so much of what's in your book, where Luke Bryan is singing with almost religious affection about trucks, about all the history that he and his family and his friends went through in their life with trucks.
Yeah.
And you identify with that sense of connection.
Yeah. I don't think when I started this project I had a realization of how deep the connection is, but I certainly know it now.
It was almost like a national anthem for truck owners. It was something like, no matter what your station in life, no matter what your color, no matter what your personal experience, your personal history, that if you have a pickup truck in your life now or you have had in the past, you feel a connection to other pickup truck owners?
I think probably that's right.
Okay, we're going next to Berkeley Springs, West Virginia. This is Dan. Dan, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment for Howard Zaire, please.
Well, a friend called me from Virginia and told me that this is on the radio right now, and I don't have radio, and I have a pickup truck, and it's a special pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a relationship personified pickup truck with a piano in the back.
Oh, you got to tell us more about
this.
Yeah,
I got to hear about that.
So, well, you got to ask me questions because I can go into a million directions. But I've had this piano on the back of a pickup truck since 1987. And I made a full-time career out of it as a pro, performing on the East Coast for 20 years. And then I turned 50 years old back in 2006, and I was just burned out of doing it professionally. And I sold my house and got rid of all my stuff and started to just drive around America from Newfoundland to Mexico and all throughout the United States, just creating music and inspiring and empowering people. And so I've had many experiences, and the truck is about dead.
Oh, really? Oh, that's a shame.
In fact, the engine has a sealer on it, and I just had trouble getting back to West Virginia yesterday from Philadelphia, and I am determined to keep this truck alive because it is so important and has had so many has been through so many experiences.
Help us visualize it. How is this piano on a truck?
Well, I started out with a piano I grew up with, and then after a year, it of course fell apart, and so I had it rebuilt. And then,
tell us about the truck too. I mean, like, what color, what model?
It's a red pickup truck, and there's my dog hangs out with me, Mo.
Is it a Ford or a Chevy or a Toyota?
It's a Toyota, 1987 Toyota. It's a two-wheel drive and stick shift, and it's.
So it's a red Toyota pickup truck with a piano in the bed on the back.
Upright piano.
Now, my wife and I had an 87 Toyota, and the bed rusted out, and that was characteristic of those. Is yours doing that too?
Well, luckily, I have a plastic inside insert.
Okay, but ours did. I rusted out anyway. But anyway,
but I'm sure
so
it's rusting in many areas. I just don't want to see it.
How do you take corners?
How
do you take corners in that truck? I guess very carefully.
There has been no truck. I've had several trucks in my life, and no truck has taken corners as good as this one.
Even with that heavy load in the back?
Well, yeah. It's actually, it helps stabilize.
An upright piano helps stabilize.
Yeah, it's two-wheel drive, so it gives us some more weight back there.
Yeah. It's served me well. In fact, I've had other trucks. In fact, a new Toyota I bought 4 years ago to use for the purpose that I use it for, and it wouldn't get up hills. It wouldn't hold on to the road as good.
So Dan, am I jumping to a conclusion here about the sense I have that you've made your life, you're living as a piano player?
I have made my living as a piano player on the back of a pickup truck, full time, successful for 20 years. And now, since 2006, living in the moment with no fees, no solicitation, no commercial organization or political affiliation, on this pickup truck, just sharing music and getting people to jump up on the truck and onto the piano seat and create music, especially if they've never done it before. And I've been, I go to communities where musicians never travel or where there's nothing in it for musicians to be there. And I've been with all kinds of people, and I've done a lot.
Dan, I got to believe that there's at least one person listening who says, I got to get Dan and his red Toyota and his black upright piano into my community. Do you have a web page, or do they just have to wait for you to get... Okay, so tell us your web page.
Well, first of all, I'll bet you have somebody listening who has seen me or even been on the truck.
That's probably right.
That's the way it works. I've had over 40,000 people one-on-one on this truck because it's all about relationship. I have a website. It's called travelingpiano.com, and that website is blogged every single day since 2006. And there's also a piece of music, too, because I never created my own music until this journey began. So I share my music, and I share my inspiration, and the piano, the idea, the feeling of playing the piano outside on the back of a truck with a dog sitting on top.
Dan, thank you so much. Good luck keeping that truck going. If you ever get it near to the James Madison University campus in Harrisonburg, please look up our studios for WMRA. We'd all love to see you.
I may surprise you. And if you know of anybody who can rebuild a truck engine, that's what I'm looking for.
I'm sure there are some. Well, and my wife figures I have a lot of more. This was only Virginia. She figures I have lots of states to go. So if I do West Virginia, I may have to look you up.
Hey. Dan, thanks so much for your call.
Enjoyed talking.
Our guest has authored numerous books. Just some of those titles include Transcending, Reflections of Crime Victims, Doing Life, Reflections of Men and Women Serving Life Sentences, as well as The Little Book of Contemplative Photography. Howard Zaire's newest book, our focus this hour, is titled Pickups, A Love Story. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. There's a fairly long section here, but we don't have any calls on the line right now. We do have a couple more minutes to fit in calls if anybody gets to their phone right away and dials this at 888-WMRA-TALK. I'm sure that we can get to you. But while we're waiting to see if that happens, Howard, there's a fairly long section in your book that I was hoping we could read at least part of. Like so many sections, this was someone who was full of surprises in what she had to say. This is Shannon on page 31. I don't know that we can get through the entire section that's devoted to Shannon in her words. But how about if we just trade off? You read a few paragraphs, and I'll read a few paragraphs. You want to start?
Okay. You want to start at the beginning?
Sure.
Okay. She says, I bought my truck on eBay when I was in a negotiation class. Our professor had us track negotiations that we were engaged in. I looked at what these trucks went for on eBay, and I could see that there was a range from about $2,000 to $5,000, pretty pricey for a crappy truck. I decided I wasn't going to go over $2,000. I'd just have to wait, and once prices went over that, I had to walk away from it. I ended up getting the truck for $2,000, but I did have to pay to have it shipped from Ohio. It showed up, and the driver's like, I don't know if you knew what you were getting. It won't start. So I was thinking, well, I guess I bought a truck that doesn't work. We rolled it by hand off the trailer, and the guy drove off. There I was with my truck that wouldn't start. I don't really know much about how cars work, but I wanted to learn about them, which is part of why I got the truck. So I looked under the hood, and it was real easy to tell right away, oh, the battery's not connected. So it was easy for my first, my first diagnosis.
Okay, and Shannon continues here. I got the truck because I also wanted to make biodiesel. I really have no knowledge about trucks and biodiesel. I think the only thing to do is just start. To get it on the road, we took the lights apart and put the new bulbs in the headlights that didn't work. That first jumping in, it was really exciting for my mom to see. What I was originally thinking, besides the biodiesel business, was being able to put all my stuff in the back of a truck. It gives a lot of self-sufficiency and independence from everything. I have a little bit of paranoia about our society totally falling apart. If you have a biodiesel pickup, then it's another step in going off the grid because you can have transportation without depending on gasoline. All of that sentiment about freeing yourself from dependence on other things was part of what I was after, but it kind of turned into the opposite of that. Now I am dependent on people who can help me fix my truck. But that's a good thing. It's been a really good learning experience to have to let people help me fix it.
I didn't get a hunting license this fall because I figured I was going to be in law school and I wouldn't have time. I was a little disappointed about that. Then I was driving home from school one day on a motorcycle, and I saw this big buck walking across the road. The truck driver ahead of me didn't see it and ran smack into the buck. I turned around on my bike and went back. This all happened in front of the campus police substation at the University of Virginia, so there was already an officer there. I asked him if he needed help with the deer, and he was like, "What do you mean? You have a firearm on you?" "Nope. What I really mean is, can I have it?" He says, "Sure, but how are you going to take it home on your motorcycle?" I said, "Oh, I'll go home, get my truck, and come back."
So it goes on for several paragraphs more, but part of the surprise here, with all these beautiful photographs of Shannon and her truck and her dog, is he part lab there? Do you know?
I think maybe, yeah.
She's a law school student at the University of Virginia Law School. And I think part of what she identifies is that she drives up to the law school and parks her truck there, and it's probably the only pickup truck there, and people don't really expect her to be a law school student. Do we have prejudices about pickup trucks that you'd like to address?
Well, I think we do.
Or people who drive them?
We make judgments about people based on the trucks, and the interesting thing is that they're often wrong. I mean, I deliberately, in this book, then tell who was a doctor and who was a lawyer and who was a contractor and who was a farmer and all of that. And we make judgments about it. And one of the things that both Shannon and her mother, who is also in this book, say is that they get such a hoot out of the fact that they don't fit the stereotype. It shocks people when they see this law. Well, Shannon says, "I don't know when I'm in the truck whether I'm a redneck or whether I'm a law student. You can't really tell, you know." And Barry, who called in, said that too. You know, "You can't really tell. I'm a landscape designer. I'm just a guy with a truck." So yeah, I think we do. We have stereotypes about people with these big trucks with raised tires. And so it was really fun to talk, and some of those are included in here, and they have all kinds of different perspectives and reasons why they do it. Some of them are symbolic. Some people like just to sit up high. So we have stereotypes, but they aren't always accurate.
Howard Zier, you identified earlier in the hour that after all these super serious books that you have written related to your primary professional field of restorative justice, that you did this book in large part because you needed some lighter fare to focus on for a while. Before you go away, turn back to the serious stuff for us. Tell us just what restorative justice is and what you're hoping to accomplish in that field.
Well, we got started in this field we call restorative justice because of really three big concerns. We realized that the legal system, even though it has some significant strengths, was not meeting the needs of victims at all.
In fact, crime
victims. They were sidelined. They were often, not only were their needs not met, they were being re-traumatized. So we were looking for some way to incorporate their perspectives and needs. Secondly, we felt that even though we punish a lot of people who offend, we weren't really holding them accountable. We weren't helping them understand what they did, what the consequences of their behavior. We weren't encouraging them to take responsibility for that. And we were leaving communities out of the process. So restorative justice really revolves around addressing harms instead of being so concerned about what rule or law was broken, addressing the harms that came out of it, the needs that came out of it, holding those who caused it accountable to meet their obligations, and engaging the people who have a stake in this in the process. So we started working in the criminal justice arena, lots going on. Now schools, the biggest growth area is schools that are realizing that their disciplinary processes aren't really helping people live together. James Madison here is one of the leaders in the country in incorporating restorative justice into their student conduct and in actually their life in general on the campus.
James Madison University.
They just went through their orientation where they taught thousands of students and staff how to use restorative circle processes that came out of the restorative justice field as a way of living together. So it's taken on lots of different dimensions that we never projected back in the 70s when we first started doing this.
Are you hoping that eventually around the world, when people hear the word justice, they'll think about that term differently and with the idea of restorative already implied?
That's part of the goal, and that is to think about, instead of asking these questions that the legal system asks, what laws are broken, who did it, what do they deserve? We hope that when people start thinking about justice, they ask, what harm has been caused, and whose obligation it is, and what do we need to do to right this wrong?
Our guest has been Eastern Mennonite University's Distinguished Professor of Restorative Justice, professional photographer, and author of books ranging from The Little Book of Restorative Justice to his most recent book, Pickups, A Love Story. Howard Zehr, thank you so very much for making time for
thank
us.
Thank you. It's been fun to be here.
You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And when you get to that page, you will find links to more information about Dr. Zehr's work. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.